18:30 prep, 2-hour nightly homework session. It was interrupted by Fatty's farting, which led to a complete classroom evacuation. Fatty pleaded that the beef stroganoff was off and the terrible smell was not his fault. Bert was so livid that he ordered Fatty to shut up and then beat him savagely on the fingers with a blackboard duster. This form of torture is called finger tongs.
A day in the life of Spud. It's been called the South African catcher in the rye and became an instant hit in South Africa and beyond. But if you expect tears, think again. John van der Ruijt's boarding school comedy, a book called Spud, is more gut-busting laugh-fest than tearjerker. The book goes inside the walls of a South African all-boys boarding school to explore the misadventures and internal life of a boy named Spud. Van der Ruijt told Dan Strangechamps how his hero, Spud, got his name.
Basically, he arrives for his first shower the morning after his arrival at the school, and he discovers that all his peers, all his contemporaries, are already shaving and have body hair and obviously have developed manhoods, and his is sort of sorely lacking behind. And as a result of this, he gets the rather unfortunate nickname of Spud, which refers to a very small potato here in South Africa. And I'm not going to say anything more than that.
No, but it sort of sets up. I have to say that your portrait of boys in this school is, they're fairly obsessed with bathroom humor, physical development, all that sort of thing. Fairly typical of boys at this age in your experience?
I think so. I think we overestimate boys at our peril. You know, they sort of have very simple senses of humor. And I think what I've tried to do with Spud is to try and capture the reality of what it's like to be in a boarding hostel, wherever you are. And I think there is a universal feel to that, because boys, they pick on each other, they tease each other about their physical attributes, whatever they may be, or lack of attributes. But yes, certainly, I think I didn't want to write a book that was purely sort of puerile schoolboy humor. But, you know, if you set it in a boarding school, you're going to be hard pressed to sort of eliminate all that. So it is an interesting mix, and I think there's, from slapstick sort of obvious humor, I think there's more subtle humor in there too as well. So it'll be interesting to see the way the American readers, I suppose, respond to that.
Are there some sections you could read from the book to kind of give us a sense of Spud's voice?
I think so. I've got a short section here, and it's from Wednesday, the 10th of May. Midnight, the witching hour. My legs were shaking. Hell, everything was shaking. I'm not afraid to admit it, but I was terrified. Perched on Fatty's shoulders with my head poked through the kitchen window, I was once again reminded why this school is a living hell. And as far as I'm concerned, this was it. How do you explain to your parents that you've been expelled for stealing food from the school kitchen when you're not even hungry? As the smallest, I was unanimously voted to lead the break-in. Eventually, I was forced through the window and landed in a heap on the cold kitchen floor. I felt my way to the door, undid the Yale latch, and opened the door for 6 madmen and a cat. Once inside, things ran fairly smoothly. Rambo knew the cupboards that needed to be opened and set about loading his cricket bag with packets of food. Stolen goods inventory. 2 kilograms of cheddar cheese, 4 kilograms of dark cooking chocolate, 10 kilograms of stewing beef, 10 kilograms of white rice, uncooked, 10 tins of tuna, 3 loaves of bread, 6 eggs, 2 broken, 1 spatula, nobody's sure how the spatula got into the bag. We soon set about gorging ourselves on our stolen booty. 3 a.m. I lay on my bed trying not to vomit. Even breathing was difficult. One by one, the group slipped off to sleep, leaving Fatty with his cheese and bread and Roger to his tuna fish. Still wondering why we risked our futures for cheese, bread, and stewing beef, fell asleep without an answer.
Now, American readers are a bit familiar with this sort of British-style boarding school thanks to Harry Potter. At least by now we sort of vaguely know what head boys and prefects are. But there's a lot more to this. There are a lot more traditions at this sort of school. For instance, there's this incomprehensible system of slaving.
Yes. Well, you know, that has shifted. I mean, obviously, this was written pre-1994 in South Africa, and obviously things are quite different now. But at the time, that was seen as, I suppose, like you would in the army, that you've got to serve your time, you've got to pay your dues, and this servitude was part of that process. There was also very strong initiations and a lot of bullying, which was, I think, seen as tradition or initiation, and I think it did overdo the line. But somehow, I think, you know, the new dispensation in South Africa, we've now got sort of strong rules against that. There's no corporal punishment, etc., etc. So I was referring back to that time, but at that time, it certainly was a very different environment, and I think reflected South Africa at the time, which was also a country that was being ruled by the sword, if you like. 1715. The first years were called to a meeting with the prefects, who told us that our week of grace was now over and that life was about to get tough. They said that we now have to slave for a prefect. This means perform menial chores and behave like a servant, and that we were now open for initiation from older boys. We were told that respect and honor were to be valued, and it was immoral to tell on another boy or to admit being bullied or initiated. Looks like we are quite literally slaves after all. I've been assigned to a tall, stringy prefect called Grant Edwards. His nickname is Earthworm, although I have to call him Mr. Edwards. Earthworm is incredibly clever and a first-team cricket player. A horrible-looking third-year boy called Pike woke us up and informed us that he was our worst nightmare. He ominously declared first-year hunting season open, peed in our rubbish bin, and left.
Some of the most fascinating stories for me is, I mean, thinking back to my own experience of that age, I was a girl, so it's fascinating to read about Spud's fledgling romantic encounters, because it gives me a boy's eye view of that whole process, which is very different. Do you have girls or women tell you that you've shown them things about what boys experience at that age that they didn't actually know?
Certainly. I mean, I've definitely had that experience from girls, and I think the teenage girls who love Spud love it for that reason. What girls perhaps don't realize is how much passion and how much boys can fall in love. You know, they always seem like they aren't interested and they're more sort of interested in playing sport or running around or doing crazy things. But, you know, the amount that Spud feels for Mermaid, for example, is massive. It's a great love affair in his mind, even though they just kissing, really. There's nothing serious going on. This in his mind is a great love affair. And I think perhaps underestimate that at your peril, the idea that boys can fall hopelessly in love and can really feel. And perhaps their greatest problem is how they deal with that, is the idea that they don't want to look like they're in love to their friends and they want to appear all sort of macho and hardcore and so forth. But I think it's a fascinating kind of thing. ...1910, Operation First Date. Black shoes, blue jeans, white t-shirt, spiky gelled hair. The movie, Ghost, with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore. The mission is to seal the deal and have my first proper kiss, called a grab. Marge picked me up in her Mazda and dropped us at the cinema. The mermaid was wearing a short black dress, high heels, and with her makeup on, she was terrifyingly beautiful. I prayed that I'd meet somebody from school and they would see me with her. We held hands all the way through. I only broke her grasp twice to wipe my sweaty palms on the underside of the seat. The movie was a real tearjerker, so I decided to look manly and rugged and unaffected throughout. We chatted about Ghost over a vanilla milkshake at the Milky Lane, and then holding hands strolled outside and sat under a big green leafy tree on the verge of the road. Suddenly, the talking stopped. The mermaid was looking at me with that same intense stare that she had given me that day on the pool steps. This time, there was no swimming away. I stared back and hoped she didn't hear the big thumping snare drum in my chest. Our lips met. My eyes closed, and then I felt her tongue in my mouth. After a moment's shock, my own tongue met hers, and we were joined in a mad tongue wrestle of love. We seemed to kiss for some sort of eternity, and when it was over, I was instantly overcome with the most wonderful feeling of accomplishment. All I could think about was charging back to school to casually tell the crazy eight that I had kissed the mermaid, and she was now my girlfriend.
It strikes me that boys in particular get a hard time in our cultures. I think that a lot of adults really kind of treat boys with great suspicion. I don't know. What do you think?
I think you may be right, and perhaps books like Spud only aid that in a way because it, you know, it sort of makes them look like they're all up to no good. But I think you're right, and I think, you know, it's not easy being a boy, and I think that's why you get this funny mix. You get sort of from lunatics to the deranged to the perfectly formed, and there's so many pressures on you, whether sort of they obviously put on you by your parents and your peers, or whether it's just the subliminal kind of thing that society does and says you've got to be a winner, you've got to be successful, you've got to do this, you've got to, you know, be macho, you've got to be stronger than your peers, you've got to assert yourself. All these things, I think, are subliminally being played to you all the time through movies and TV and music, etc., etc. And I do. I think it's tough being a kid. I think even it's tough being a girl. I just think there's a teenager now, life is far more complicated than it was, certainly when I was a teenager. And I imagine in 20 years' time, it'll be even worse.
John van der Ruijte is an actor, writer, producer, and the author of the novel Spud, as well as its sequel, Spud, The Madness Continues. He lives in South Africa.